Trigger was a woman. So what? KGB has got plenty of women agents and women gunners. I'm not in the least surprised. The Russian women's team always does well in the World Championships. Last meeting in Moscow, they came first, second and third against 17 countries. I can even remember two of their names, Donskaya and Lomova. Terrific shots. She may even have been one of them. What did she look like? Records will probably be able to turn her up. She was a blonde. She was the girl who carried the cello in that orchestra. Probably had her gun in the cello case. The orchestra was to cover up the shooting.
Oh, said Captain Sender slowly. I see. The girl you were keen on.
That's right.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'll have to put that in my report too. You had clear orders to exterminate Trigger.
Welcome to the James Bond Complex. My name's Matt.
I'm Edgar.
We are a James Bond podcast where we discuss the entire James Bond phenomenon, from Fleming to film and everything in between.
Ooh.
And today is, again, a special episode.
Do we ever not make a special episode?
We're always making special episodes. But this one is particular because this is the last time we'll cover the works of Mr. Ian Fleming. I was going to call him Sir, but he's never been a Sir.
No, he has not been knighted. But no, it's a very important point that you bring up there, Matthew. It's exciting because it's more Fleming and we have so much more Bond material to read. A lot of it is exciting, new possibilities. But the fact that we're leaving the true, I shouldn't say true, but the original source material, the maker.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little sad. It's a little sad. It's a new year. So it's January. It's the first weekend of January. We just celebrated New Year. So I guess we're sort of turning a page on Bond, so to speak.
It's my birthday yesterday.
Happy birthday, Matthew.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a new page. It's the last chapter. And, well, we're going to start also a new chapter in the new year. The James Bond Complex will return. We're not just covering Fleming. We'll cover...
Oh, yeah. If there are any listeners, if anybody's been listening to these first 2 minutes going, what's happening to the show? We're not going anywhere.
No. We have so much ideas, so much. And, I mean, we've been in contact with other podcasters, YouTubers. I mean, we have to start the ball rolling with other operatives.
Other agents in the other field, people that are fans like us. A couple, it's not the time to name names on the show, but some names have come up that we're like, that would be awesome. And like you said, we just need to get the ball rolling. We've had a couple. I mean, we interviewed a Bond villain last year.
Yes.
We interviewed someone that wrote for the MI6 Confidential magazine. So, Jason is our man in the field. So it's a little different. Yes. You know, he's one of us. But it would be interesting to get people really involved in the show. The Christmas episode was cool.
The Christmas episode was fantastic. I'm so proud of it.
The numbers are pretty decent on that one.
Yes.
But like a proper... us actually talking with these people, that would be fun. Yeah,
there's plenty of stuff coming up with the new year, but let's get started with this last novel. It's a collection of short stories. Some of them were written before Fleming passed away. Some of them were published after he passed away. I think Octopussy was published first, with The Living Daylights and Property of a Lady. I'm fuzzy on the dates, but I know The Property of a Lady was written for, I think, the Sotheby auction house, and Fleming didn't like it and refused payment for the short story. And I think
we'll see if that reflects in the review.
And 007 New York is a similar affair. It's something that he wrote almost as an afterthought. So I'm not going to go into too much details. I mean, there's a Wikipedia page for that. I mean, we're here to chat about the story itself and our feelings, thoughts about it. And if we found any interesting tidbit information by reading it. Like for Your Eyes Only, we sped up Duty's reading synopsis. I have to get started with Octopussy.
Yeah, so the order of the stories is Octopussy, Property of a Lady, The Living Daylights, and finally 007 in New York.
Exactly. And 007 in New York was not part of the original printing. I think it's later on they added story.
Yeah, it's funny what you were saying about Property of a Lady. There's no in my edition anyways, there's no preamble to Property of a Lady, but there is a preamble to 007 on New York that says what it was published in, why he wrote it. It's sort of an apology for the way he describes New York in thrilling cities.
Yeah.
He says, well, maybe I'll soften the blow with a James Bond story in New York. So.
And in the audiobook collection that I've been listening to, it's the one that I think you have. It's, what's his name, Tom Hiddleston? Loki is doing the...
I may have become a victim of the iTunes stuff disappearing. Like, it's just not there anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Honestly, I've listened to it, and it's not that...
Doesn't matter if it's gone.
It's not that great. And it's not that he's... bad. It's just I'll get my
we'll get there,
And the last one is read by I forgot her name. It's one of Fleming's niece. She starts by saying that almost like sorry, but this is like Fleming. Ian didn't like his stay in New York when he wrote that. He had a bad time or something. So it's a weird audiobook. So I understand why you didn't enjoy it, but the other ones are.
Well, I didn't say I didn't enjoy it. I said it's not in my library anymore.
Yeah. Well.
iTunes said, no, this is not.
So let's get started. Major Dexter Smythe has just finished his unsuccessful hunt for a scorpion fish at his Jamaican estate when he receives a visitor, James Bond 007. 007 confronts Smythe with evidence from a war crime that the Major committed during the Second World War. It turns out that Smythe had learned the existence of a secret stash of gold hidden in the German Alps. Smythe kidnapped Hans Oberhauser, an Austrian climber and skiing instructor, and used him to find the cash and properly executed him. In the years since his crime, Smythe was able to smuggle his gold and sell it to finance his retirement in Jamaica. It turns out that Oberhauser was some sort of father figure to Bond. That's why when 007 learned of the case, he made sure to handle this matter personally. Surprisingly, after this confession, Bond doesn't arrest Smythe immediately. He tells Smythe that he has a week to take care of his affairs and promptly leaves. Confused and nervous, Smythe decides to go hunt down a scorpion fish again. But the hunter turns into the prey as the Major gets stung by the deadly fish. With moments left to live, Smythe grabs the corpse of his aquatic killer to feed it to his pet octopus. Weakened by the poison, Smythe is grabbed and drawn by his octopussy. And thus ends a short story.
Grabbed by his octopussy. That's a pretty good ending. no, it was well played. I like it. That's a little bit like what I would write. Very well good. Well,
thank
good.
You.
Well,
I'm
good.
As proud of that one.
No, you should be. Well, that's a bit of an interesting one. It's
similar to Quantum of Solace.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's more conversation and there's backstory relating to the life of a character other than James Bond. A large portion of this short story concentrates on what Dexter Smythe did post-World War II with this poor Oberhauser chap in search for the gold. There are some interesting details. I mean, is it a... is it a thrilling book? Well, maybe not, but I still kind of like the details of what Dexter Smythe did in World War II. This I didn't take note of it, but the name of his unit is funny. It's like a Department of Random Affairs or something bizarre like that. It's a very random name, but the word random is in the name. Like, that kind of detail is interesting. I like it when Fleming, whether he invented that or not, I'm sure it can be Googled. I didn't. You're the research man. But I do like it when Fleming does that kind of stuff, when he gives the background. He's very good at delivering background content to his characters.
He's excellent at it. It's sometimes so confusing because he gives a few details that, as someone who's been like reading these books and trying to research them as best as I can.
We strive to be.
I did find a few notes every once in a while. And in this book, what I found particularly interesting is that it's Fleming that was partially that spent some time in the Austrian Alps, and I googled that to see if Oberhauser was based on a real person or someone that who might have been killed during the war. It turns out that it partially is, because he was raised by a couple of people that was trying to it sounds like a very hippie commune type of thing, where they try to they had these troubled kids. Like Fleming was rebellious in nature mm-hmm. when he was a teenager, and basically they were trying to give him somewhat of a decent learning experience, and then sort of give them the ability
maturation.
Maturation. Give them the skills, like enhance their. Apparently, Fleming was a great writer when he was a teenager, and the name of the lady. Let me get my notes. Her name Phyllis Bottomy or Bottom. I don't know.
Sounds like a Bond girl name.
It does. She ran the school that Fleming attended with her husband. She was a fairly good writer, and she wrote a bunch of books. They made some movies on her books, and apparently she had a gentleman's secret agent character that allegedly served as inspiration for 007 later on. But yeah, that's where Fleming learned to ski, so that's where the similarity between the two characters ends, basically.
Like we've said, we haven't said this in a little while, but you know, James Bond is a reflection of Ian Fleming's, to an extent, personality and tastes. Yes. I feel we haven't brought that up in a while, but this feels very appropriate to bring it up, since if Bond personally wanted to handle the mission because he knew Oberhauser, sort of reflects what Fleming went through.
I'm going to propose something rather weird about this short story. It's James Bond meeting Ian Fleming. Dexter Smythe is an alcoholic, has a troubled life.
Bit of a womanizer.
Bit of a womanizer.
Military past.
Military background. He is a version of Fleming.
Lives on a beach. It's likes to swim.
I'm imagining Goldeneye in my head. I don't know if Fleming stole some German gold. I don't think he did. His family was pretty wealthy.
Honestly, even if he did, I forgive
him. I forgive him. Gave me years of entertainment. But yeah, no, it's to me, it's the similes are when you're reading his frame of mind that he's sort of on his last legs and he's sort of not very healthy. He's just swimming. And that's what, as far as I know, Fleming was doing mostly during his retirement at Goldeneye, was swimming and hunt fish. Sometimes he actually brought carcasses of meat and fed them to sharks near his estate. Oh, yeah. That was one of his hobbies.
Likes to live dangerous and likes to live on the edge.
Especially they listen to the sounds they made while tearing into the flesh of the carcasses that they fed to sharks.
Oh, Fleming had a wide array of interests, I guess, listening to that sort of noise. Well, then again, it's a fair point. I think you're probably on to something in so far as he wasn't very healthy anymore. He probably envisioned that his time in this world was, that the clock was ticking, so to speak. The countdown was on. And so he invents this character, or he projects himself into the story, but this time not as Bond, but rather as the slightly older man that is has had a nice life. He's a relatively successful life, certainly living well now. But his time is up. Although, I mean, in this book, it's different because he's going to be court-martialed. What do we think of maybe the character's... Actually, what do we think of the character's decision to sort of go back in the ocean? And I guess it's, he does that to...
That's where I'm confused, because the way I remember, the way it's always been told to me is that he sort of commits suicide, but it's really not. It
doesn't read like that, I find.
It's not suicide. I think when you know, I think it's something, when you have something tragic happen to you, in this case, you're going to be court-martialed, your life is basically over. When people are confronted with tough situations, sometimes they go back to their primal instinct. They're going to do something that makes them feel comfortable. In this case, it's, I'm going to go fishing.
He's also, the reason why he keeps going to see his little octopussy and hunting the scorpion fish is that he's actually promised a local aquarium
thing. Yeah.
A marine biologist thingamajig. To test out, well, will an octopus eat a scorpion fish? So he's been making these attempts underwater, obviously, to make contact, so to speak, with the octopus. It's why he thinks he's gotten to know it a little bit, earn its trust a little bit. He calls it his octopussy. And the octopus seems to remain huddled, sequestered between some rocks. He can't really see it very well. So he sort of gently, prods it a little bit. And then this time, And so he's getting to know this octopus whilst hoping to find the scorpion fish and see what happens when he tries to feed the octopus with it. But of course, as we've obviously spoiled, that doesn't go too well this time. But hey, great timing, because you're going to be court-martialed anyway, so it's all good.
I did research a little bit what the effects are of the scorpion fish thing. It doesn't necessarily kill you when you're stung on your fingers or your feet, but in the chest, it can be quick and lethal.
Yeah. And he does get stung.
He gets stung in the chest. He notices, oh, geez, I'm stung. Mm. I'm screwed. And yeah, so that's actually accurate, this reaction. But the symptoms are strange. It evokes a heart attack. So I'm like, I feel like palpitation. It almost provokes a heart attack. So I'm like, that's ironic, because that's what killed Fleming. So I'm like, there's a...
Well, I remember when we were doing prep work for our Comic-Con presentation, we sort of got to know some points about his health fairly well. And as I recall, at this point, it was like 5 or 6 months ago. But as I recall, one of the points we brought up was that he had suffered one or two heart attacks. So probably knew what he was talking about when he wrote it. So how about let's get into the actual backstory, Dexter Smythe backstory. Kind of an interesting little adventure. You can tell that the guy he's adventurous.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bit of a... I was about to say he's a bit of an Indiana Jones in so far as he likes to go treasure hunting, quite literally. Although he is a bit of the dark side of Indiana Jones, because he will assassinate...
Like Belloc.
Yeah, he's kind of like Belloc. He'll rid himself of the people that he maybe doesn't have really any intention of sharing his bounty with. I was trying to understand, is it cold or is it not cold in the mountain? Because they're shirtless most of the time. Is it just because it's like sunny and they're doing exercise with the shirtless? Or am I misreading it and it's not winter at all? Because you can be hot. I don't know if you've skied. I haven't skied in a couple of years, but I used to ski regularly. If it's like a really, really, really nice day and it's like plus one, plus two, you can actually feel pretty hot. So I was wondering, like, is it winter?
Or
is it...
I imagine it was winter the entire time. I forgot. I didn't get that they were shirtless at all.
Oh, no. They say that he uses, after going up the mountain and finding the gold and killing Oberhauser, the way he goes down, because he's these two massive gold bars of Nazi gold. Doesn't he use his shirt as a sling to, like, carry them?
Yeah, I think he does. But I mean,
so I was reading and I was like, I guess it's not really that cold. I guess it's like, and then it brought me back to those days where I've skied and it was like actually a warm day. So like, I guess that kind of makes sense.
Keeps his winter coat on and tears a shirt and uses them to carry the gold. I don't know.
That's fine. It struck me like when he was saying that they were shirtless, because I assumed it was cold, but it clearly can't be.
The entire time I'm imagining, it reminded me of Inglourious Bastards, like evil Inglourious Bastards that were stealing Nazi gold. It's actually there's numerous cases of Nazi gold being stolen by Allied soldiers. Some of it was used to finance some banks, and people a lot of people. The worst thing I read was that some of the gold was from tooth that were removed and smelted. That's nasty. That's just evil.
Anything to strike it rich, I guess, or to make a quick buck. You know, there are moral, there are ethics to that. You know, what is the morality or the ethical dubiousness behind stealing Nazi gold? I guess, I guess you could sort of wiggle your way out of it depending on what you intend on doing with the gold, if it's for personal benefit. But even if it's for personal benefit, I suppose it's better in your hands than in the Nazi hands. It is still a fascinating thing. I haven't read it yet, but there's a Chasing Gold. It's a book I bought in the bargain book section. I didn't go a few months ago, but the cover was striking because I haven't read it, but it is about people in World War II that were chasing Nazi gold. So it is I should probably read the book, but but it is a subject that has interested me for a while. This notion of treasure hunting, the treasures of the bad guys. Like, it's kind of cool. I do. It's interesting.
It's quite fascinating. There's a movie called The Monuments Man. George Clooney.
I don't think I saw
John
that.
John Goodman. I saw parts of it on TV, but it's looking super interesting. It's just that, you know, there's been a glut of World War II movies.
Well, maybe not so many of them have been about the Nazi treasures that the Nazis, in large part, the Nazis themselves stole. I don't know of too many that are like that, which is why that movie kind of, I don't know why I never went to see it finally, but.
Anyway, back to the short story.
Back to the show.
Yeah, I mean, as a short story, I mean, it doesn't feature Bond at all.
He's very, and in fact, the story is quite clearly told from Dexter Smythe's point of view.
Yeah.
So Bond feels like a secondary character, even insofar as how Fleming writes. We're not in Bond's head in this short story, which there's The Spy Who Loved Me. But yeah, I guess I was about to say we haven't seen it before. Wrong. We've talked.
So
we spent 2 hours on a book that was about that. But we haven't seen it often. So it does make for a different twist, so to speak.
Do you want to rate all the short stories or give them your final thoughts as we go along? Or do you want to tally up which?
Well, no, I mean, they are individual stories. So yeah, I mean, final thoughts on The Living... excuse me, it's the title of the book. But final thoughts on Octopussy is... it's all right. I like the backstory.
I like the backstory.
Yeah, I like the 5 or 6 pages that tell us what was Dexter Smythe doing in the army, how did he find Oberhauser, what did he do with Oberhauser. That was cool. You know, it ends fine. Maybe a little bit predictable when Bond shows up and says, "Oh, I'm arresting you." It's kind of figure where the story's going.
Yeah, it's very meh for me. It's long winded, the explanation of where the gold came from, how he smelted it. Like, okay, you could have stopped at I stole the gold. Well, you snuck it out from Germany, and how you brought it to Jamaica, how you had it sold in bits and pieces for years. That's details that I did not need.
Oh, that's actually the part I liked.
I was
around it that was maybe less interesting.
I was bored. I was like, oh, just... And like, I know where this is ending.
Yeah, it was like the evil Indiana Jones. So I kind of thought it was interesting, or Belloc.
So yeah, it's not my least favorite short story. It's probably it's of that book selection. This is probably the second one. So it's not that bad, but it's not that great either.
Mm.
So moving on to
Property of a Lady.
Property of a Lady. I know you haven't read that short story either, so let me get started.
I have no idea how I got through Octopussy, for that matter.
It has recently came to the attention of MI6 that Maria Frunstein, a suspected KGB double agent, received a Fabergé clock that is to be sold at an auction to serve as payment for her work. 007, under M's order, is to attend the sale. It's suspected that a local KGB chief will attend the event in order to raise the value of the auction so that Frodenstein is able to get as much money as possible from the sale. During the auction, 007 is finally able to identify Comrade Pietur Malinowski, agricultural attaché to the embassy. Bond has identified his man and will have him arrested and expelled from England. Thus ends The Property of a Lady. It's rather... Short story.
Yeah, pretty short one. I believe this is the second shortest.
Yes.
The second shortest. This one was a bit of a more of a struggle for me. I didn't outright dislike it, but it was a little bit more of a struggle. If we're going in the order, you know, Octopus, yeah, it's okay, it's fine. This one, a little bit less than fine.
You're very kind. It's not my last one. It's the next to last one. But this is basically, you know what this is? This is the expert talking to James Bond about subject number 3, like heraldry, for 15 pages and a little bit about an auction house, how it works.
Yeah, it's I guess it's weird. You know, we just talked about a short story where Bond really wasn't the central figure. We barely see James Bond at all in Octopussy, but I sort of went with it anyways for the reasons I just elaborated on earlier in this episode. This time I had a little bit more trouble. Even though we actually do see more of James Bond, it just doesn't feel like a Bond adventure. I mean, an auction, even James Bond is a little bit surprised at how the auction is going. Doesn't he make some sort of a comment of like, oh, how come nobody said going, gone? Like, takes the excitement out of it. And so even James Bond is a little disappointed by how the story's going.
Honestly, the only thing I found interesting is the idea of KGB double agents working inside the MI6.
Yeah, the purple circle?
Cipher.
Cipher,
excuse me. I've been watching a lot, and I mean a lot of documentaries on spies during World War II and during the Cold War, and that's been quite fascinating, and it reminded me of a few documentaries that I saw about double agents working and selling information or giving information to the Russians. But that's almost like an afterthought on that short story. It's like it sets up the events of the auction, but in the end, it's rather meaningless. You don't find out what happened to her. Although I did read on the wiki, because I checked, that the character of Maria Freudenstein is mentioned as being one of the people that I think Scaramanga kills in The Man of Gold with the golden gun.
He kills Maria Freudenstein?
Apparently she's dead either by the time of Golden Gun or even by the time of You Only Live Twice. One or the other, I don't remember which one.
It's funny, I guess along the lines of Octopussy, or my reaction to Octopussy, with respect to Property of a Lady, I guess what I did find positive was kind of what I thought was positive about Octopussy, the backstory. I guess when I'm reading these short stories, it's so compact. There's so little time for, quote, an adventure to happen that, you know, if it's 20, 25 pages long, if Fleming is going to spend 12 of those 25 pages describing something, well, at least make it interesting. Like I don't know how to explain it. When it's a novel, you know, we keep going back to Diamonds Are Forever, although that review at this point was a while ago, but I still remember it. Yeah, almost a year old. But I remember it fairly well insofar as, well, not only did we not find maybe the whole adventure that great, but that bloody chapter where Emma is talking about diamonds was just such a bore. But I guess that's because I wanted to get on with the adventure. Whereas here, if it's just like 30 pages, you can't really do a spectacular adventure. So yeah, I guess, you know, what is this girl doing? What's the purple cycle and cipher? I don't know what it's called. I said circle, cycle. It's actually
a cipher.
Cipher.
It's a machine.
So what's this machine? What is she doing? What is Fabergé? You know, what is this clock? The description of the clock is awesome. It's like green and there's a map of the world. And, you know, it's that's pretty cool. But no, and it ends on a bit of a wet noodle. Oh, there's the guy. Okay, let's arrest him. Done.
Basically. I mean, it served as inspiration for a much better, a fairly good Bond movie. But in the end, even Fleming refused payment for that short story. It was the command that he received from Sotheby. It was not out of his own, oh, I'm going to write a short story about an auction. They hired him for that purpose. But he said, you know, it's not very good. So, you know, keep it, but I'll keep your money.
I can't say I'm terribly surprised to learn that it wasn't Fleming's instinct to write this, but rather through a partnership with Sotheby's. Because, again, you know, hindsight is 20/20. Now that I know that information, it's easy for me to sort of change my thought process. But I'm not surprised to learn that there is something that I couldn't put my finger on. It just doesn't feel like Fleming's really gung-ho with this one. It's like, it's whatever, man. Let's just go to, you know, the description of the auction house is quite nice. There's a glass ceiling so the light can come in. And the description of the people, the sort of personalities that are there, and then sort of not the maestro, but whoever the heck runs the show there, or says, you know, sold and this and that. Oh, can I have a 5? Can I have a 10? You know, that's kind of interesting. But yeah, on the whole, it's a little flat. It's a little flat. Although I will say this, you know, you gotta love Fleming. You know, at the heart of this story is this young woman Of course she got to be ugly.
Yeah, she's a villain. She has to be ugly. I was waiting for the description. I'm like, okay, she's ugly.
Mm. Yeah, that made me laugh. For not, you know, it's 2019. Maybe I'm not laughing for the quote right reasons, but I laughed. I was like, of course she's ugly. Yeah, she's the bad guy.
She's a bad guy. Fleming writes comic books for adults. There's that comic book element. Mm. All the bad guys, ugly looking.
It's not quite clear what her reasoning is. She's from England. She decided to go to Russia, and when she came back, they clued in that she's now a double agent. We don't get any deeper than that.
You go to Russia, you turn into an evil communist. Wow, it's automatic.
They are evil communists.
Even Bond went to Russia.
He became an evil communist.
He became an evil communist.
They had to
beat the commie out of him.
And they had to electrify the commie out of him. Electroshock the commie out of him.
Bzz, bzz.
Thank goodness for technology. It's a good thing they had that back then.
Yeah. So if we go and tally them up, I mean, this is so short. There's not much in those short stories.
For your eyes only, this is not.
Yeah, I don't know why. For your eyes only, all these short stories were fun. They were filled with characters. They were a little bit longer. They had meat on them. Even Quantum of Solace had some, you know, some bittersweet philosophy to it. Mm. Everything in this is forgettable at best, and sometimes in one case doesn't warrant being read today.
Well, okay, so if we're ranking these without spoiling the official ranking, right now Octopus is still at one, and now Property Ladies at two.
Yeah, if we're tallying up like that, this is what I would surmise their placement.
All right then. We have a shocking announcement. I had to read half of this book.
Thank God, because I had no idea.
You didn't read this?
I didn't read. It's like I didn't do my job.
Oh, boy. I hope people like my synopses, because there's going to be a lot of mine all of a sudden for the next few weeks. Doing these two. I'm doing the next two. I'm doing the movie. Okay, so the next book in this collection is The Living Daylights. And this is what happens if you must know, Matthew.
Tell me. I'd have to know.
007 is sharpening his sniper skills at a special firing range in Bisley, England, preparing for an assignment M himself feels is distasteful, the direct assassination of an enemy agent. MI6 have had a man in Eastern Europe since the end of World War II that goes by the codename 272. 272 has collected enviable secrets from the East and wants to come back in from the cold. The crossover is to happen in Berlin at a location that would shortly thereafter be known as Checkpoint Charlie. The kicker is that the Soviets are aware of 272's general escape route. Bond, with the help of local contact Captain Senders, must fend off a Russian sniper on one of three possible evenings when 272 will make his way from the east side to the west side under the cover of night in a rundown, war-torn area of the city. On the first evening, 007, his trigger finger at the ready, notices a group of musicians entering East Berlin's Soviet HQ, in particular a lovely girl with a cello. Bond is taken by her beauty and demeanor, even though he only witnesses them for a moment. Her charm stays with the secret agent over the next 2 days and evenings as he and Senders await 272 to make his move. Finally, on the third night, the escape is put in motion. Much to Bond's alarm, the Soviet assassin is the lovely cellist holding a Kalashnikov from one of the windows of the building where the musicians had been practicing. 007 rebukes the orders to kill, preferring to knock the firearm out of her hands. This will, ironically, probably send her down an even worse fate than death, punishment at the hands of the Soviet state. Despite Captain Senders claiming that he must report Bond's insubordination, the latter is content with the idea of having scared the living daylights out of her. Thus ends The Living Daylights. Comes the morning.
Not yet. This was much more fun.
Agreed.
There's a lot more meat to it. There's, you can almost go like I did on Google Map and map the run that the agent 272 makes to escape from Russia. The buildings, I don't think they're there. It looks like condos. All of them look like condos.
Yeah.
To me. I don't know if you looked at
it. It's kind of, no, I haven't. I rely on you for that stuff. But what I thought was interesting is that the book, in the description of where this action is happening, Fleming says, I think a year after the time this story takes place, it's going to be known as Checkpoint Charlie. But at the time this adventure is happening, it's like a piece of garbage area of town. Yeah, so they really must have really cleaned it up for it to become
still war-torn.
Yeah. And the description is quite... But I like the idea of they keep seeing this, a river of light. Like the lights of the street make a river of light. So this 272 fellow just has to make a clean getaway across this river of light, and he's home free, but it's a lot of tension. This is a really... I like this one a lot.
Yeah, no, this is clearly number one.
Spoilers, we haven't gone to 007 in New York yet.
Oh, Jesus.
No, I think we're back with Bond. We're actually with Bond in his element. I like the idea of even M not particularly caring for this mission. I think if you're going to misunderstand... the character is he doesn't enjoy, he's just damn good at it.
Yeah.
But he doesn't like doing it. And that comes across as I read this story, as does his feelings, his feelings towards this cellist. We've all been there.
Oh, yes.
In Berlin. Yes. Spying on it. But we've all had that. Like, you see someone for a moment, 2 moments, one evening, never see this person again, but like, wow, she was really something. And you sort of can't get her or him, depending on which way you swing, or lady listeners, you can't get that person out of your mind for a few days.
Just captured and
enthralled. Yeah. And we start projecting our own thoughts. Oh, what if she's like this? What if she's like that? You have no idea what she's really like. You saw her for 5 minutes. You barely said hello to her. He doesn't even say hello to her. But you still, you can't explain it. But it happens. It happens to all of us. We've all been there. So that was a really interesting part of the book. It's certainly a more romantic. It's like misplaced romanticism.
Because
it's never going to happen.
I have the perfect analogy. It's elevator romance. You see someone you fancy, you get into an elevator with that person, you don't talk, but you look at them and you just picture yourself with them the entire ride. When that person leaves, that relationship is over. It's like you lived a lifetime with that person in your head because you were just imagining it.
Even though the elevator ride was... 20 seconds, what a ride.
What a ride. So, but
it's an interesting analogy because Bond and Senders are cooped up in this little apartment. So it kind of is like an elevator. Like
Senders.
He's all right. He's
the anti-Bond. He's so unlike Bond.
Career man, pencil pusher.
Snooty.
Yeah, pencil pusher. He's not terribly aggravated that Bond, it's not like in the movie, but he does say, oh, sorry, chap, I'm going to have to report you for that. And Bond, like in the movie, doesn't really care because he only kills professionals. I thought this was really cool. First of all, it's the first story of the three we've read so far where there's something important.
Yeah.
Something big is happening.
There's tension.
There is a lot of tension.
There's suspense. And all the other short stories are deficient in suspense and tension.
I kind of like the idea of Bond. I don't know if this is brought up in the earlier books. If so, I've forgotten it. But he likes thrillers. He likes to read thrillers.
Yeah, he reads some weird German. Honestly, they look like the way they describe. They don't look like legit good literature. They're like very pulpy, cheap.
Maybe like the giallos from Italy.
Yeah, something like that. But it amused me, and like that's perfect for Bond. Like something that he throws away when he's done. He doesn't bring back to his apartment. It's just like a little bit smutty. That's what it looked like.
Yeah. Well, he's not always the most respectable character anyway.
No.
So One wonders where he gets those ideas from sometimes. Reading too many of those dirty books, Bond.
But I'm pretty sure like that's from Fleming also. That's Fleming was known, like, he had like very naughty books that as part of his romance strategy, I guess. Mm. Bond is reading a book that's not like high literature, let's just say.
It's where he gets all his pickup lines from. I also like the part of the book where during the daytime, the morning, afternoons, I think they have to be ready at 6 every night or 5 every night. Yeah. I can't remember. Maybe 7. But I like the portion. It's not a long portion, but I believe it's after the first evening. Yeah, it must be after the first evening because he keeps thinking about the girl with the cello a couple of times. But I like the idea of spending some time with Bond. He knows he has a mission. It's later that day. It's at a very particular place at a very particular time. But for the next 12 hours, he's really got nothing to do. So he's just going to go around Berlin drinking coffee, eating bacon, going to a park. I don't know. I feel like we haven't witnessed Bond. Have we witnessed Bond just waste time? He has nothing to do? Not really.
Not really.
He's usually enjoying himself because the mission is very...
I think the closest thing
Hildebrand
is
Rarity?
I was gonna say A View to a Kill, from A View to a Kill, and when he's in Paris at the beginning, he's just
that's true.
Muddying around, but it's
View to a Kill, Hildebrand Rarity, maybe Come to Mind. They're just like trying to catch the fish there at the But yeah, this is like, well, it's like 9 a.m. I have to be back at 5. Like, let's just go see the city and eat. I was kind of interesting. Again, it's some those little moments where Bond is not in the element we sort of just assume that he's always in, you know.
I also like when after Bond shoots Trigger, as she's called in the book, I think.
Yes, that's true. I actually forgot that part.
When he shoots Trigger, Saunders like, yeah, he jumps off and he's like almost doing a little jig of success, and Bond like, get down, and because they get shot back.
Bad. They actually have to huddle in the kitchen, I think it is, because like it's an extra wall to protect them. But yeah, the apartment is riddled with bullets by the end of this mission, essentially. So yeah, that was kind of neat. That I know I had read this before, but I had completely forgotten about that. I thought it just ended there.
Yeah. For a lot of those books, it had been years since I read them, and sometimes I did not analyze those stories as much as we did on this podcast when I first read them.
I don't think I've, except for in elementary or in high school, I don't think I've ever analyzed novels as intensely as we have since this podcast, you know.
I don't know if I should. Like, I feel like I dragged you into this. I'm sorry. I don't know if you're enjoying it.
No. It's James Bond. I'm more than happy. I'm just realizing now. Yeah, it's like just
same for
we're,
me.
We're not talking about, you know, political science or arithmetic or chemistry books for a university exam. Just like a novel, like a piece of entertainment. I've never analyzed anything like
analyzing. Had been a while for myself too, but no, I've enjoyed that part. Also, something that caught my attention this time around. It's something that's mentioned. I think it's just one line about Trigger. Bond shoots her, but he says he theorized that she might lose her hand.
Mm.
I'm like, that's like, you know, just that notion that someone that's being wounded by Bond that loses a limb comes back as a villain, that should be recycled as an idea. There you go, Ian. Another one for you.
Mm. Well, I guess Zukovsky is sort of.
Yeah, but a sexy Bond girl that's missing.
That'd be kind of cool.
That's kind of cool.
Really cool. What do we think of, like, there's a paragraph that describes the bed where he's sort of not resting on, but he's using to crouch on or to lie on. But the gun itself is equipped with like a little hoodie, and he reminds me of like the guillotine or something like that. That was kind of, which is appropriate, I suppose, because
that's
basically what he's doing.
Yeah.
Or what he's assigned to do, let's say. That was kind of a morbid but very apropos touch.
This is a very, very, very cool short story. It warrants reading. Like this one, I has a genuine thumbs up.
I was surprised about the Kalashnikov, though. Like,
as a weapon? Isn't that not the most... It's not the most reliable... Like, I'm not a gun
accuracy,
expert.
Accuracy, sound, really? This is how you guys are doing this?
And if I remember right, in Back to the Future, the terrorists that tried to kill Marty McFly, they were using Kalashnikov, and he, like, apparently when he said what he says when the gun jam is like, goddamn Russian gun, it's a Kalashnikov. If I remember correctly.
So I have not
they're,
seen
they're known to jam, and I don't know if they're that accurate. They're machine guns. They're not like
sniper. Yeah, no, it's not a sniper. So it's like, a machine gun. So the, it's very strange.
Yeah, it's really... And the, you know, the images of the movie press on, like, integrate, merge for that short story.
The first 15 minutes of the movie is basically this. They're just not in Berlin, but other than that, it's this. So yeah, this beautiful girl who I think is actually a blonde. I think she's a blonde.
Like
it's kind of hard not to say, oh yeah, I guess that's Miriam Dabo. Like it's hard not. What did we do just recently? Right, Mary Goodnight. Mary Goodnight, as described by Ian Fleming, is Britt Eklund.
Yes,
so it's like Britt Eklund was in the book when I was reading that. As I read The Living Daylights, it was Miriam Dabo who was going into this music practice, you know, session. And then later in the window, so.
I was trying to Photoshop a Kalashnikov in her hands, and it doesn't work because it makes no sense. But I was glad you picked up on that because I was like, that sounds weird. Like it's probably me, but because I'm not a gun guy, but that sounded weird. And you're confirming my theory that it's unusual.
Yeah, it's very unusual.
So, your thoughts and feelings?
Very good. Very, very good. I would say, you know, I know we're not reviewing Furry Eyes only, but I would say The Living Daylights would put up a good fight against a few of the ones we read in Furry Eyes only.
Actually, I know why they didn't do, because they printed that book to make more money on the name Fleming. And,
sure.
But they could have reissued Furry Eyes only with those short stories, and it would have been perfectly fine.
Yeah, they could have.
So
it's my number one. So it's displaced. What the heck was my number? Octopussy. So it's Living Daylights, Octopussy, Property of a Lady.
I think we have the same tally.
It's like we're sending that. Well, we haven't talked about
the amazing,
the good one. So we have now reached the final short story in this collection. The title is 007 in New York, and I will provide. This feels very strange, me doing synopses for books. Ugh. 007 in New York. Bond touchdowns in the Big Apple for an assignment involving a young British expat and MI6 employee to warn her about her Russian lover, who has ties with the KGB. After scrambling his way through the airport and customs, 007 imagines what the next few hours will be like before and after meeting with the girl at the New York Zoo Reptile House. While not a fan of New York in general, he hopes to make do and see the sunny side up of things. His likes and dislikes for the big city are shared with the reader through narration, from the stores, the hotels, the culture, to the food servings. While the mission is one that will leave a bad taste in his mouth, chances are his night with MI6 contact Solange will prove savory. But even a hard-boiled agent like 007 can't foresee problems such as faulty intel, which fries up the original plans, leaving Bond to wonder who was the egghead that thought there was a reptile pavilion at the New York Zoo. And thus ends 007 in New York.
I'm sorry. You were saying
there were some little there were some little Easter eggs in that synopsis to try to make it sound interesting. I'll let the listeners figure out what the heck I'm referring to. But anyways, let's get to the actual story. Or was that a story?
Is that a story? I mean the only thing, because to me it's Bond complaining about New York for like how many pages does this last?
About 10, 12.
That's about it. This was not in the original printing, and
no, it was in the. If listeners will just bear with me, very sorry for the interruption. The story that follows was first published in the USA in October 1963 in the New York Herald Tribune under the title Agent 007 in New York. I won't read the whole page and a half here, but basically it's a preamble to the short story that we're talking about. That says it's Ian Fleming maybe feeling a little bit guilty for having apparently, I haven't read Thrilling Cities. I have a copy. Apparently, he really freaking blasts New York in Thrilling Cities. And so this is sort of his going like, okay, how about I give you guys 10 pages with James Bond where he has some nice things to say about New York, unlike I, Ian Fleming, have.
He doesn't say, I mean, all the things he complains is that, oh, this place is closed, this place is closed, oh, this one's still open, this one's still open. And the things are that were still open have either closed since or changed.
It's from the early 60s,
I
mind
know.
You.
But I have to mention, he mentions the Grand Central Oyster Bar, and I've been.
Nice. Let's take a look.
I've been in New Year's Eve 2011. Well, between 2000 and 2011,
it
2012.
Nice?
It's super nice. It's super fancy. And I think Joe Darlington from Being James Bond that mentioned it in one of his podcasts. And I did the thing that you're supposed to do. It's in the sort of vestibule before you enter the oyster bars. You go into each corner. Because the acoustics, you can whisper against the wall, and the person on the other side of the other corner is going to hear what you're saying. And I tested it with my brother and sister. We're like, it works.
Nice. Is that because of the acoustics, you say?
Yeah, it's because of the like the way it's set up, the acoustics. There's other places where you can actually do that, but this is one of the places.
Interesting.
Other people were doing the same thing.
We can hear everyone.
And I had, I'll say it's a good restaurant. I think they go there also on Mad Men. It's a notorious like place in New York.
I got to watch that. I'm way behind on my TV.
Oh, yeah. And in the bathroom, there's a little attendant that's going to like give you like perfumes and stuff. And like it's super cool.
Because like, otherwise you'll smell like oysters.
Yes. I don't even remember what I had for lunch when I went there. But I know my brother and sister and I had a great time. And there was all thanks to Ian Fleming. So thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. God Mr. bless Fleming. You, Ian Fleming. Even dead, he's still useful and entertaining.
Yes.
But maybe less so in this one. I mean, you know, so he's sort of whining about the places he used to like that are now closed. The hygiene. Apparently, the Americans are far too hygienic. Last, he loves meeting up with Solange because they're sort of like F buddies.
Yeah.
But instead of a post-coital session relaxing in each other's arms, she goes to the bathroom to clean up and take pills.
She gargles.
Yeah. And what else does he complain about? Yes, all the food is frozen. There's a flat taste.
They don't have brown eggs. They think they're dirty.
Yes, we don't sell them here, mister. Everybody thinks they're rotten. So, again, but this is... look, 007 in New York, the short story, is not particularly interesting, but... If I'm going to maybe go to bat for it, although very tangentially, I'm sort of taking around a long way around.
Good luck.
Is that, thank you, is that it in some ways, in some respects, it does go back to a couple of the conversations that he and Felix Leiter, who doesn't feature in this one, but conversation that he and Felix Leiter have had in the past, like Diamonds Are Forever, like Live and Let Die, where they're comparing, contrasting and comparing, how are things done, how are things... done, worn, driven, eaten, and drink in England, and how are all those things done, worn, eaten, smelled in the United States? You know, we've witnessed those conversations before, so we know that Bond, especially when it comes to the United States, I'm not saying I don't remember him doing that comparison in any of the other countries he's visited, but I feel it's I feel like he's always doing that whenever the books take him to the United States, so it's sort of brought me back to the, basically what I'm saying is it made me think of more interesting chapters.
It made you think of a more interesting book.
I miss Felix.
It's like, yeah, they mentioned the St. Regis that I think he stayed in Live and Let Die, and the bar that's
the 21
Club.
I feel like that wasn't the first time we heard that.
21
Don't they
Club,
have lunch in Live and Let Die there?
I think it's mentioned. No, it's in Diamonds Are Forever.
Could be. That's true because he's in the United States in both of those.
Yeah. It's still around, and like I think I remember I showed you the pictures. That looks very tacky.
Yes,
with...
yeah, but that's what I was thinking of the picture you showed me. I was like, this is not the first time Fleming's talking about this place. You know, But yeah, it's not that. That last paragraph, like, well, it's because there is no reptile. This poor girl, she's threatened to commit suicide. Like, it's a funny last little paragraph, but it's sort of too little, too late. It's like,
it's not my favorite book at all.
Yeah, so
it's not my favorite story in that book. The only, you know what? The only good thing they can do with that title, because they won't be able to use that as a movie. 007 New York, that's not about movie. People were like, would be confused by it. Use that as a video game. Make a video game called 007 New York. It's James Bond in New York. It's Daniel Craig, James Bond, and he fights a bunch of villains. You bring back Scaramanga, you bring back Sanchez, and doing a drug deal with Mr. Big in New York, and you bring back those characters. Don't need the original actors, just do a version of them, and... There you have it. It's your video game.
Fixed. But sure. Well, I guess final rankings for me, I feel it's going to be the same. It's Living Daylights.
Yes. Good,
number one. Number two, Octopussy.
Yes.
Number three, Property of a Lady.
It's like you're reading my mind.
And 00, the 4, 5, and 6... are empty. 7th is 007 in New York. So,
yeah, that's pretty much it.
Unfortunately, which is a little bit unfortunate because this. I mean, we have now completed our review, and it's the last thing we've read.
So I wish we finished with The Man with the Golden Gun. To be honest,
yeah, which we were by and large pretty positive.
I was very happy with that book, but this one has left me.
By the time this episode is released, the Golden Gun review will be out there,
yes.
So listeners will know what we're talking about.
If this was the only book that Ian Fleming wrote, there wouldn't be any James Bond franchise. This would not exist.
No. This is a cash grab.
There's something stinky about this book. It's not up to par.
No.
It's not even up to par to the other short story collection.
Nope.
It's leftovers.
Yeah, definitely. We've seen Fleming at the peak of his literary writing skill powers, Promotion of Love, Moonraker, Live and Let Die, Majesties, Spy Who Loved Me, which we were extremely high on, even though it's a very different book, collection of short stories and phrase only, we were extremely high on that. So we've seen Fleming do different things and do them really, really well. I consider You Only Live Twice to be a fairly different type of book.
Yes.
We were super high on that one. Yeah, this is also different. You have an auction, you have a war criminal, you have a trip to New York. Unfortunately, none of it's really that interesting.
It's, I wouldn't say it's sad, but, you know, part of me is like, you know what? We've seen what the best he could offer. We've seen the worst he could offer. The artistic license of James Bond, the character, has ended. You could say that James Bond is over with Ian Fleming. Even after the movies, it's not the same thing. But if you are a little more flexible and you're willing to follow us, we'll be reading what other writers did with the character.
Oh God, I didn't know what you were getting to. And now you're making me terrified. Like, please, listeners, don't abandon the show.
Some of them are quite good. I know you haven't read the James Bond biography, nope. Which I did, and I remember really liking it.
Oh, that's on the docket. We're definitely getting into that.
Or, I mean, we have Colonel Sun. We have a bunch of Gardner books. We have a bunch of Benson novels also.
Well, the ones that have been released over the last decade, give or take. Devil May Care, Solo, the two Horowitz books from the last couple of years.
Carte Blanche.
Yeah, it's true. I wonder why I keep forgetting that one.
Literal Carte Blanche.
Yeah. So, no, this is the end of our journey through the books.
And who knows, we might come back, find a way to, a reason to come
back. Well, we've already talked about today recording something that has to do with...
Yes.
Fleming. So we're not completely... Who knows, maybe if the well is... Hopefully this will be much further down the road than Chloe, but if the well's really drying up, we got Thrilling Cities, you know, there is still
Diamond Smugglers,
you know, there's a lot of Benson and Gardner and Amos and Horowitz to read, and comics and newspaper strips. You know, there's a lot to read before we get to Diamond Smugglers and Thrilling Cities, but they're always there. They're always there. Yeah.
So, I mean, it was interesting to spend so much time with Mr. Fleming, and I'm glad I'm glad that we came back. This doesn't sour my opinion of the previous books that we've read. This is just unfortunate that it's like Orson Welles, great actor, fantastic director. His last movie credit is Transformers the movie.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Like, this is his Ian Fleming's Transformers the movie in a way. Like, I don't know if my analogy it works, but it's a lesser work. It's even like I love Transformers the movie because I saw it as a kid, but it's like when you think about the legacy of the person that's involved.
It's very strange.
It's very odd. And this is a very odd end to a rather significant literacy legacy. Because, I mean, spy movies and even spy novels, to a degree, are either in contrast or a reflection of James Bond universe. Wait.
What?
Before you tell me where we have people everywhere, we forgot about the book review from James Bond, the Man and His World that we have used as a reference for the Fleming canon. Can you tell us?
Whatever do you mean? I didn't forget.
I'm sorry. I forgot. can you tell us what the readers or critics thought of this book at the time of its release?
Yeah, well, it's funny. These two pages, unlike many of the other ones we read, there's a lot about the story and inspirations, but less reviews. There are no reader reviews.
Oh, shame.
And there are two critic reviews. Who cares what the plebs have to say? So here's what the critics said. I am not surprised that Fleming preferred to write novels. James Bond, unlike Sherlock Holmes, does not fit snugly into the short story length. There is something grandiose and intercontinental about his adventures that requires elbow room and such examples of the form as we have tend to be eccentric or muted. There are no exception. Good job, Philip Larkin from The Spectator. Slight and predictable and usual sex and violence yield to a plausible use of ballistics and marine biology. Times Literary Supplement. Yeah, I guess a journal with that kind of a name would produce that kind of review. Those are the only two for this.
Jeez, that's got my like the entire book. It's a little bit of a letdown. Edgar, please tell me, do we have people everywhere?
Yeah, we do have people everywhere. We have our own official website, which is also our Tumblr platform, the triple W. I don't know why I say the triple W, but it's a habit of mine. The triple W dot the James Bond Complex.com. There's a great Facebook page, as I like to think a great Facebook page. Search for us at the James Bond Complex on Facebook and join in on the fun. We have a Twitter account at the Bond Complex. For the visual artists out there, we have an Instagram account. Search for at the James Bond Complex. And there's YouTube. That's the one I keep slipping my mind.
Even I've been slipping because I haven't updated. There's a bunch of episodes that aren't on the YouTube.
Yeah, that one's a little bit tricky.
I got flagged for one video and I'm like, I've been, you know, I need to figure out how not to get flagged before I re-upload.
We'll find a way. So search for the James Bond Complex on YouTube. And as for the podcast itself, there are various platforms to listen to us on. Well, if it's not at Anchor, who I never mention, anchor.com is actually our host. Thank you. As well as Google Play. Last year, we could Google it. You can still Google it this year. The James Bond Complex and Apple, the iTunes Store. And don't just subscribe, but write a review. And give a glowing 5-star Golden Gun review.
Yeah, get those golden stars running, please.
Yeah, they're great.
They help.
Pretty. And they're just attractive. They're nice.
They're so cute and adorable.
Yeah, it's like back in the day when we were children in elementary school. If you did a good job on your homework, you would get a star. Mm-hmm. I think we're doing a good job on our homework.
Yeah, Ben, we're consistent.
And you, the listeners, who are sort of like the teachers grading us, you may give us some stars.
Yes, please. Five.
Yeah, there are five spaces. So if you can, you're all smart people. You can all count to five. You just have to click five times or click on the fifth one, I guess.
You know, if you're like us, you wish you could have give us seven, but unfortunately, you have to stop at five.
Yeah. I'm on Twitter at @OOPOP. That's the word OOH_POP.
I'm at Matt O'Claire with two T's.
Unforgettable. And just as James Bond always returns, so too will the James Bond complex with the film adaptation of one of these stories.
Yes. We could have picked up Octopussy, but I think we're...
Well, we had done so much, not that I'm complaining, but we had done so much Roger Moore.
I mean, we finished Connery and we're going to keep some Moores for the future. So I proposed, and I'm a fan of Timmy, so I'm like...
It's time. Next week. We'll be back next week with The Living Daylights. Merci beaucoup. Toujours un plaisir. Bonne année et à la prochaine.
Au revoir.